you think it needs to reform. Give me a call and tell me your opinion. The number to call is 0345-6060973. Text 84850. Tweet at Majid Nawaz or at LBC. I have Rizwan on the line from Leicester. Good afternoon, Rizwan.
Good afternoon, Majid. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Tell us your experience with Prevent.
It'd be very hard to do justice to my story in a few minutes, but for 5 years, I dabbled with extremism. It started at the age of 19 when I asked my parents' permission to join the Taliban. Just as a Shara'an process, I believed by Islamic law I needed their permission to go. They didn't give me permission. I ended up asking scholars for permission. They didn't give me permission either. I'd meet them privately in mosques, that kind of thing. But to cut the story short, at the end of my journey, near the end of it, I had a 5-year plan of what I was going to do. The first step would be to try and make it to Syria. If not, if I was incarcerated here, I had a plan of what I'd do in prison. I'd memorized meticulously how to construct explosives using Al-Qaeda manuals. And I'd revised them multiple times every day, and I was going to just revise them in prison until I got out. And I knew how to bring down a building. I knew how to compromise the structure of it using explosives, where to rent a flat, all that kind of thing.
You memorized all of this?
Meticulous detail, yeah. And I actually sent you guys, Quilliam, an email right after my experience with the security services. But I didn't get any response or anything. Don't know why, but never mind that. My plan was to line up bombs alongside two train lines, four bombs alongside two train tracks. And I actually had two potential targets for assassination as well. And sadly, you were one of them. The other one was Malala Yousafzai.
So Rizwan, moving away from naming specific individuals who may feel threatened by that, tell me how you... Did somebody recruit you? Were you doing your research online? How did this process begin with you?
Both. Online, I think, was predominantly the way that I learned things and justified things and whatever. I was in touch eventually with ISIS soldiers through Twitter. I would communicate with them through that method. And then I had people where I grew up, the city that I grew up in, that thought like me as well, and we'd go and we'd visit scholars together and we'd discuss some of the things that were on our minds, and then we'd go away and we'd talk about how the scholars were not sincere enough. And I knew people who were banned from all, they were Muslims, they were banned from all mosques in our city, for instance, because of things that they'd done.
And so when you hear from your experience that you've just told us, and thank you for opening yourself up to this, it must be quite scary for you to speak about this now, but when you hear people denying that extremism is a problem within our communities, what do you have to say to that?
Oh my God, it's a massive problem. The amount of people that I know that, I mean, they could be so close to setting off tomorrow or today. They could be so close, it's within a fraction of a second, and it's even... I mean, the groundwork is already there within their heart. They believe this. They absolutely believe. I mean, I got to the point where I believed my mission in life is to just further the cause of my version of Islam through violent means.
Rizwan, this is really powerful stuff. And when, you know, as you mentioned myself, I've been campaigning for 8 years now within the communities and actually on the airwaves and any opportunity I can get to... warn people of this and to put this message out. How did you look to people like myself, a former Islamist, and those others at Quilliam who were trying to do this work? Did anything get through to you from our message?
It'll be hard to say just on the spot now because it's been a year since I left Islam and whatever. I've kind of become a completely different person and all that kind of thing, but I'm sure it did play its part, yeah. And I used to frequent your website a lot. I read a lot about you. I read your book. I borrowed it from the local library.
This is before you changed or after you changed?
It was before I changed, yeah, because you see, you were so sincere whether I was going to... I used to walk the streets and look at little girls and think, why do you deserve to die? And I used to go home and justify it in my mind. I used to go to the central mosque and I used to look at the imam and think, why do you deserve to die? And I used to go away and I used to justify it. Eventually, the security services had me sit down with psychiatrists who were completely convinced I was 100% sane. And they told me, it's clear you believed this and you could justify it through scripture and so on. And I told them exactly how. I knew the scriptures off like a database in my mind.
Yeah, I could tell you the same thing, that it's quite easy actually to do that. And you know, as you know, I've had a past 13 years as an Islamist as well. Though the group I did belong to, as you know, Rizwan, didn't explicitly endorse terrorism, but it was an extremist group
for a while as well, and they regarded me too extreme.
So how did you end up changing? So you said you read my book and you were kind of, you know, having these questions in your mind. What was it, a long process that helped you to change, or what happened exactly?
It was 5 years worth. And what happened was, it's amazing. I was in the process of getting rid of all of my things, giving them away to charity. And then I was going to move flat once to clear my tracks a bit more. And then I was going to set off, and I had the money ready and everything. And then what happened was, I was still praying, like I was the most devout Muslim I'd ever heard of, never mind met. And during the night, I would be, you know, tears running down my cheeks, and I would be just asking God, please, if I'm wrong, then show me that I'm wrong. I'd already gone through the whole process in my mind of what are my friends going to think when I'm in the newspapers, what are my parents going to go through, and I justified that it was all worth it. So I'd be there. It was just me and God now. And I would say to God, if I'm wrong, please show me, this kind of thing. And then finally I got to the point where I thought, okay, let me now think ways that would be blasphemous to me to have thought before, because I'm about to die. It literally hit me that I am about to leave this world in some way or fashion. I'm about to go to prison. I don't know what's going to do to my mind, if I'm going to go psychotic. I thought, this is the moment now for me to think a certain way that's sinful. So I started to read things from a whole different viewpoint, and then suddenly things started to unravel. And then there was this, my world kind of turned upside down. I thought, hold on, have I seen everything in the wrong way? And then that was a long process as well, and that's how I kind of left that. Yeah. I've already put one foot in hell, but that God would kind of take that foot away, and the rest of my body would go to heaven, type thing.
Yeah, well, the exact same thing happened to me when I was in solitary confinement after we witnessed the torture in Egypt. And I got to that brink where I said, I want revenge against the Egyptian state, and I'm prepared to be a suicide bomber because I watch people die in front of me from torture. And it was at that moment that I had to permit myself to think differently, just to be sure, just to be 100% sure that I was right. And, you know, the rest is history. It unraveled from there. So I really relate to your experience.
And
tell me,
you know,
after
one of the worst things is when you get into the mind frame that they have signed their own death warrant through their actions or through their attitude, because then it's a deflection. You no longer see yourself as responsible for their death. Rather, it's between them and God, and I'm just a tool of God.
Yeah, yeah. And so have you made your change, now we're on air, obviously, but prior to this, had you made your change public to the community you live in and to your friends, who you're saying you're aware of many friends who are literally ready to do something?
If I went back to my hometown, it's very likely I'd be beaten to almost death.
Wow. So nobody knows where you're staying at the moment?
No, I haven't seen my friends or family in 3 years.
And is this the first time you're speaking publicly about this?
No, I've spoken to many people about it.
I mean, on media?
Not on media, no. It's been vicars and priests. I'm actually Roman Catholic now.
But this is the first time you're speaking on the media about your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm honoured that you're calling, Rizwan, because I think the nation is probably gripped by what you're saying right now. And
I actually
your family
called one time before, and are asking the question, is it justified to assassinate British people were fighting for ISIS? And I would rung up to say, yes, it is, because I know what these people are capable of. And I think the person who I spoke to was shocked and didn't give me a call back. He kind of started shouting, you were doing this and that? I said, yeah. And he didn't ring me back.
So, I'm glad you got through this time. But tell me, what after you left, and you're saying now you're living away from everybody, I want to focus in on one element of your change, and that's that I didn't do what you're saying you've done, which is you left the religion and become Roman Catholic. And that's perfectly within your right. But intellectually, do you think there's a way out for people without having to change religion? Do you think that there is a way to be a Muslim?
Yeah.
I clearly do think so. But
yeah, for me, I guess the whole intellectual process of, that I had already started, the whole kind of, blaspheming, blah, 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 it continued to the point where I became Shia initially. And then after I found some things about that religion which I couldn't really continue believing or practicing, there was nothing left of Islam for me to follow. And I dabbled with all sorts, Sufism, like the Shadli order, the Qadri order, the Naqshbandi Haqqanis, all sorts of different people. And there was just really nothing left there. But I think, yeah, there is. You know, one psychiatrist sat with me and the security services arranged it for me. And he says to me, do you think that if you grew up in an Orthodox Muslim family, because I grew up in a Diobandi Muslim family, which is very close to Wahhabism and so on. It's almost the Indian Wahhabism.
Just for the listeners, the Taliban emerged from the Diobandi faction of Islam.
And I'm Afghan ethnically as well. I'm sure that played its part, with disillusionment in this country, not knowing who I was, being an Afghan here, second generation and so on. But this psychiatrist, he said to me, if you grew up in like a Sufi family where you were good to your neighbors and you believed in, civic engagement and all this kind of thing, do you think you would have still ended up the way you did? And I said, it's still likely, but I mean, infinitely less likely. I'm sure there are people in that kind of Muslim background who can just continue their life and be good to people, and their faith can be that salt in their life or more than that and make them a better person.
Now, Rizwan, the process that you went through and the process that I went through, as you agree, there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of young, angry Muslims in the country who are still stuck there. And you and I both know what that feels like. And it's a horrible place to be in. If they are listening to you right now, what would you say to them?
Oh my God!
Give them some advice. Help them live. Help them choose life over death, and tell them why that's important.
It's so difficult. I think it comes down to every single individual person. But the security services asked me. They told me they've got a young guy. He's still in secondary school, and he sits in class and he draws pictures. He doodles a plane going into the Twin Towers, and he's still in secondary school. They said, what can we do with him? And I actually said, send him to every single imam of every single Muslim sect and get him to sit down with each one and learn his religion better. And they were shocked that I said that. They thought I was going to say tell him to, become atheist or read, Dawkins or something. But I told them that instead. Go learn your religion properly, and you realize how little you know when you speak to the proper scholars.
That's something I've said in my book, actually, that actually when I was in prison and I read in the original Arabic, I read all the traditional Islamic books, and I realized that stuff we were prepared to overthrow governments for, the traditional theologians would debate over the pages and books. And, they would write books to refute books, and they would then still be cordial with each other. And I learned that through my own study. And it's incredible how much we thought we knew, and it turns out we knew absolutely nothing. Now, I'm not a devout Muslim anymore. I make that very open. But still, I agree with you that actually there is a way that people can be Muslim and follow devoutly what they think is the correct version of Islam and avoid all of this extremist nonsense, this theocratic extremism that has emerged of late among our communities. And it's would you agree, it's something which is ahistoric. It's not historic to the traditions.
It always happened somewhere. You had the Berbers who'd rebel against the caliphate, and you'd have rival caliphates and that kind of thing. But majorly, most Muslims, you've got to be human before you're Muslim. You've got to be human before you're Roman Catholic. You'd be human before you're religious. And most people have their day-to-day worries. My mum wears the full, burqa, niqab, everything. And she's a good woman. I'd actually make parallels between my mother, who's Diobandi and wears a niqab and burqa, and Mary, the mother of Jesus. That's how good of a woman my mother is.
Tell me about your family. Did they, when you were becoming radicalized, did they desperately try and stop you to change your mind? Did you listen to them?
I mean, that's one of my regrets, that they didn't try hard enough. My father is somebody, you know, he's buried his head deep in his work, and my mom, she's just, you know, head deep in worship.
So you think people, okay, back to the, because we're running, unfortunately, running out of time, but back to the top of the question that we kicked off with, do you think that there is a need for the government's counter-extremism strategy, knowing the experience that you have, and do you think we're doing enough?
You know, they offered me a job to pretend to still be Muslim, and they said they'd send me around the country, and that I was going to report back on imams and individuals and so on. And I said to them, I can't do that because I believe in love. I believe behave lovingly. I mean, continue doing your work, all the counterterrorism and everything, but do it with love. Give these people a reason to stay in this country and to appreciate what they have in this country. I mean, if they were in Pakistan, in India, in Afghanistan, or in Bangladesh, wherever, with their goat or like half a goat or the almost dead goat and nothing else to their name, they would think very differently about this country. I'm sure they'd be very desperate to be here.